Accession number 13358, Mr. H. Wilkinson, reel 4.
Mr. H. Wilkinson, Reel 4. What other forms of discipline was meted out?
The Jankers.
What were they?
Answering the call. Well, most of those.
Answering the call, what was
yes,
that?
The bugle blew, and they had to run like hell to the guard room and report. And then they were allowed to go back, and then they were meted out various duties, usually to do with the cookhouse duties, you know, cleaning the big dixies and spud peeling and what have you, or maybe cleaning up a bit in the cookhouse.
And was that considered minor punishment?
Yes, anybody that committed anything serious, they were put into the guard room, and occasionally they were let out under guard to do various tasks. It just depended what was allotted to them. They may be doing a bit of painting or whitewashing cobblestones set at intervals around various huts. Well, chaps that were in the guardhouse were considered to be in real detention. As I say, odd times they got out, but under guard. Then they were marched back. And what happened to them after that, after being to see the CO, whether they were allotted to a camp or all the shot, you know, the glass house or whatever, I don't know. It just depends what they've done. That's all I can say about that, I think.
All in all, you found the discipline something that you could bear and take?
Oh, yes, yes. Uh-huh. Well, you know what to say. Keep your nose clean, let your hat cover your worries. That's the best way to deal with it, you know.
This was a Durham Light Infantry training camp?
Depot, yes.
And you were, in effect, in the Durham Light Infantry?
That's right, yes.
Did you know at this time which battalion you were in?
No, not really. It was just a training battalion. And then, as I say, we moved from Brandsputh down to Kent, to Folkestone.
And before we move down there, you mentioned the corporal, which you had a run-in with. Do you recall your sergeant?
Oh, sergeant? Yes, he was a biggish, raw-boned chap from Tyneside Way. They called him Watson. And he used to like him to bawl and shout, and he introduced himself as, or rather, the corporal. And then he said, what he goes, what he says goes, and what I say goes twice. And his attitude and everything, he got nicknamed the Führer. I said it, Watson.
Was he fair? Was he respected?
Well, I never had any bother with him, really. I think his bark was maybe worse than his bite. I think he was quite fair, really. I mean, he had to do his job. He was training a lot of chaps that were green and new to the army, so what could you expect? Somebody had to be gaffer.
Were you organised into platoons?
Yes. Well, huts, really. Huts.
Was there an officer in charge of you?
Yes, there was. But I can't remember the names, Harry, no. I mean, every so often an officer came round, or you'd maybe be in your hut and the sergeant would come in and shout, "Hut, attention!" And the officer would follow in and sergeant salute, and he'd go around whatever he had to do, whether it was kit inspection or just the hut inspection, or just to see that everybody was all right, you know.
Did you ever see the battalion commander?
Yes. I think once there was a parade and he was there, and I can't recall which particular one it was. I think there was a change in battalion commanders at the time that I was there.
Do you recall any names?
I can't recall any names, Harry. No.
Did you finish with a passing out parade?
I think it was RSM's parade, as far as I can remember. Or was it? No. CO's parade. And then the RSM took over. And then we did whatever bit of drill he wanted doing and stood down and went to our huts. And then we were allotted passes, rail, way down to Kent.
Did you make your own way to Kent, or were you going as a group?
As a group, as a group. Officer in charge, and their way down through Ashford and into Folkestone.
What date would this be?
Oh, no, Harry. It'd be 6 months, or maybe 6 months and a few days from my enlistment there at Brunswick.
So that would make it around about May of 42.
May to June of 42, yes. Uh-huh. Yeah.
You'd been told where you were going. Which unit were you joining?
17th Durham Light Infantry Battalion, which was a holding and drafting battalion. And I was eventually drafted from there.
When you reached Folkestone, what was the reception like there? And I was a trained infantryman.
It was just like going into Brunswick, really, except it was another camp at a different part of the country. Chaps, the NCOs were quite nice. They did their job, and you did as you were told.
Did you join a company?
No, I can't say that. Just the 17th Battalion, it was known as, I think, if I remember rightly.
What were you doing with that battalion?
Just general duties, training, keeping the barracks and that clean, and down into Folkestone if you had a few hours off. Jerry used to come in there invariably through the mist on a morning and in the evening mists. He'd come in and maybe drop a few bombs or do a bit of strafing. And he used to come over into our camp. And I was looking out the window one morning, I think it would be. And he came in out the mists over the sea and dropped bombs in the parade ground. And then another Sunday morning, we were going on church parade, and we went from Cheriton Barracks down the bank and on into Folkestone. And as we were marching down towards this church, Jerry came in again, dropped some bombs, and he hit the church and he hit a gasometer. So that was all cancelled until we had to about turn and back to barracks.
Was it a good camp?
Yes, quite good, really. It was old-fashioned barracks. But you made of it what you could. The one thing that happened there that I wasn't particularly keen on, they turned night into day and vice versa. It took a bit of getting used to. They did that for a fortnight.
What exactly was that?
Well, what we would do through the daytime, you did at night, and through the day, he was sleeping and going to naffy. And seemed funny. And we were going out on exercise.
Trying to sleep through the day was the job,
because the sun was quite bright and it was quite warm and stuffy, and it didn't take to it very kindly.
What kind of exercises were they that you were doing?
Route marches, general duties, general drill, exercising out into country, you know.
Were you now involved in things like platoon and company training?
Yes.
How do they go as an infantry unit? For example, platoon training, what would that be?
Well, training with your rifle and bayonet and on the Bren gun. And then field exercises.
What were field exercises exactly?
Well, sometimes you'd have some of the chaps split up as enemy, and you'd be marching along the road, then you'd be told there was enemy in that vicinity, or you'd break off, you know, and clean them out of a wood or something like that, wood clearing and what have you. Sometimes they'd be dug in, and a few blanks fired here and there, and a few thunder flashes.
And that advance into that action, was that as a line in the old traditional way, or fire and movement? Where
fire and movement, yes. Uh-huh. Fire and movement.
What exactly was fire and movement?
Well, you'd be going along and you'd hear a few shots, and you may see fellas dodging about, and you had to try and outflank them and beat them at their own game, take them prisoner or whatever, you know. And there was the forced marches, and towards the end I think we did about 80 mile in 72 hours, and that was with the little skirmishers to the side, you know. You'd be marching along quite content and happy, then there'd be a whistle blown, and then there'd be enemy to the left or to the right or whichever, and you'd have to go and find them, fire at them, clean them out, take them prisoner if you could, and that would be the little exercise, and then you'd go again.
Did those exercises entail working with other units from other regiments?
Now and again there would be, yes. There'd be carriers classed as tanks, and you'd have to kill tanks and one thing and another. And then on this other lark that we're on about, where we did 80 mile plus the skirmishes in the 72 hours. And we've been in this patch of scrubland and little wood where we had breakfast, and it consisted mainly of beans. We had these, at least some of us had and some hadn't, when we got the fall in. All of a sudden you had to dump whatever you were doing and cram everything into your packs, and off we went again. And after a few mile, one or two of the blokes started running to the hedge. And then the officer looked back and he saw this carry-on. He wondered what the hell was the matter. Well, they'd all been taken short. So anyway, he'd got them to fall in again, or so he thought. I think some were a bit longer than intended or expected. And then he was taken short, he had to fly. I don't know, but I hung on a bit, and we got into this little hamlet where there's a few cottages, and all of a sudden I felt it coming on, so I knocked like hell on this little door, and an old lady answered it, and I asked and explained, and she let me straight through, and it was an earth toilet outside, like, she let me through, and I was fortunate. I could spend a bit of time cleaning myself well. There's hell on. I don't know how it happened or how it ended, really. But when we returned into camp, we had to be all smart and in order. And 160 to the minute back in. Incidentally, when I was in that camp, there was a a chap, he was going on draft, and he asked me if I would like to buy a pair of civvy shoes. He said, oh, he says, have a look at them. He said, there you go. Right size, and they're quite smart. So I bought them. And then when I went on leave, the wife saw me in civvy shoes. She said, where did you get them from? So I told her. She says, you'll follow him, you'll follow him. And sure enough, he was the first chap I saw when I got to Geneva. The same lad. He'd been wounded slightly up the desert, and he was down in the camp, Geneva. And as it happened, I'd kept the shoes in my kit bag. I said, hey, I says, do you want your shoes back? He says, you're kidding. I said, no, here they are. So I gave him them.
Did you get any opportunity in Folkestone for working with tanks?
No, no, we were just infantry.
Mm-hmm. And you didn't work with the Royal Air Force or Navy in any exercises?
No, not there, Harry. No.
What weapons had you been introduced to at this stage? You've mentioned rifle and Brens. Were there any other weapons?
There was another weapon that had come out, but I didn't handle it personally, but it was on various little manoeuvres that we had, and it was the anti-tank rifle. It had a longish, thicker barrel than ours, and to what extent it was really useful, whether it would kill a tank, I don't know, but it was supposed to be. It may have done at that time, because out in the desert, when we went there, they only had 2 pounders to start with. Well, our shells were bouncing off Jerry's tanks.
Had you done any training with gas precautions?
Oh, yes, we did training at Bransworth with the gas masks. We went into this room and had to raise the side of your mask, and the NCO saw that you did like so, that you got a whiff of this gas. And you were taught about the mustard gas and whatever. I just forget the other one.
And did you carry your respirator with you at all times?
Oh, yes, you carried that wherever you went. That was right from start to finish. Right till we got to the desert, we carried those. And then the first thing we did when we got out there, there was a great big trench being excavated, about 10 foot wide, I should think, and round about 40 foot long. We filed past, and we put all our topies in and our gas masks. And they were rather astonished, and they said that it was because the air was too light to contend with gas. And Jerry, he always carried his. His was in a cylindrical groove tin, but they always had them. We never had them.
At this stage of the war, we're into 1942, were you getting any lectures about the enemy and how they fought and how you should contend with them?
Yes, you got various lectures, Harry. And one of the main ones that you got was how he was so specialised that if an NCO got knocked out, or the machine gunner got knocked out, or anything like that, they just seemed to collapsed and disintegrated. They weren't a fighting unit anymore. Where we were versatile, I mean, we could take over most anything.
And did this prove to be the case when you saw action?
Yes, in my particular instance, there was a time when I collected quite a few of the enemy weapons, a Spandau, a Smyger, an automatic pistol, apart from my own rifle and what have you. But that's another little story, and that happened in France.
Were you also being taught in your lectures, or seeing in your lectures, enemy weapons, how they were used and how effective they were?
Yes.
What was the weapon which was, or weapons which were put to you as being quite effective?
The Spandau. Mainly on account of its high velocity and the speed of the number of rounds fired, rather. Pardon me, that frog in my throat again. And just about his armor and such as that, you know, what it was as in proportion to ours, and how good his 88 millimeter guns were, which they really were a fine weapon.
Had you been introduced to the hand grenade?
Oh, yes, to Jerry's. Yes, with the stick on.
And our own hand grenades, what were they?
The 36 was our main one, yes. A segmented metal 36. And then we had a phosphorus grenade. I think it was 70 something or other. I'm not sure whether it was 70 or 72. I can't recall really, Harry, after all these years.
But you were taught to throw them?
Oh, yes, sir.
Yes. How accurately can you throw them?
Well, pretty well, really. I mean, sufficiently to get into the vicinity where it would do some damage. You maybe didn't always get a direct hit at what you were aiming at, but many a time it was effective enough to knock them out.
The method of throwing, what was that?
Oh, release the pin, arm well back, and aim as you would more or less if you were aiming a cricket ball. Overhand. Mm.
In the 17th Battalion, did you know that you were there just waiting to be drafted elsewhere?
Oh, yes. Mm-hmm. Yes.
How long were you with them?
Now then, Harry. Time limits, that's what gets me. I can't really say. I should think. Around about, as near as I can say, a couple of months. And then we moved up, I volunteered for draft down in Kent. But we weren't at Cheriton Barracks then. We'd moved under canvas to a place called Capel Lifern. And it was just, actually it was a country house with its surrounding grounds. And we were under canvas. And officers and senior NCOs were in the hall. Mm.
Did you consider yourself a fully trained infantryman by the time that you came to leave the battalion?
Oh, I was quite confident, yes. Yes, I just thought, well, there's a job to do, and there's myself and the rest of us to get on with it as best we can. It was up to you if you could remember what you'd been told.
Up to this time, the way that the war had gone had been pretty disastrous for the British Army.
Oh, yes.
How were you coping with that situation, that it was defeat after defeat, or appeared to be so?
Well, I must admit that quite a bit of that was at the back of your minds, but you just plodded on and hoped for the best. It's a long road that has no turning.
Were you confident still that everything would come right in the end, that you'd beat him?
I never thought of defeat. I can't say that I thought of beating him in as much as I was that definite about it, but I just never thought of defeat, Harry. No.
You said that you volunteered for draft. What did you do?
Well, we're at this place called Capel Lifern. As I say, it was in the country. And there was this little chap, Harry Waters, that had joined up with me, that worked with me as an apprentice. He was 6 months older than me. And there was four other lads that were more or less piled on with, not like as close as Harry and I were together, with being mates all the time through. Quite often we were all together when we were out in town or having a drink. And They said, how about volunteering for the next draft? So they seemed all for it. And I said, all right, Harry, says I. Well, I was keen in a way to put some water between me and the wife. For fear I got the urge to go AWOL, to be honest. I thought, if I'm out of this country and some water between us, that's it. I'm doing what I was meant to do, and I wouldn't have that worry. So, as I say, we're going to volunteer together, half a dozen of us. So we're sat in this field after lunch, and the CO has given us a lecture, and the Sergeant Major came up to him and had a few words with him. So he saluted and went away, and the CO said, there's a draft short of men. We want some volunteers. Volunteers are better than pressed men, if possible, but I'll still have to get that number. So we were on one side, and the other four were more or less immediately across from us. So I nudged Harry and nodded, and nodded across to the other fellas. Harry and I put our hands up, and the other fellas didn't, the other four didn't. So, right, we were allowed to fall out. We had to go and lay a kit. And went down to company office. And the sergeant major was in the office, and he'd sent his sergeant out. We're reporting for draft. Oh, yes. You laid a kit? Yes. Which one of you is Waters? He says, I am, sir. He says, well, you can stand down. He says, you've laid a kit, but you're going on an RT course. So that meant I was going on my own, as far as I knew. Somebody else had volunteered, or they'd been pressed, I don't know which, but it wasn't these four. They weren't there, so I had to make fresh mates. And then we moved off down to a big hotel in Folkestone itself. It was a big hotel. I can't quite remember the name of it. But we're in there. And anyway, we had NCOs and officers. And then we moved from there up to Ilkley.
Had you been told what the draft, what unit the draft was for?
No, I don't think we were told, actually. No.
Had you been told it was abroad?
Just that we were going abroad. We didn't know where. And it wasn't until we got on board ship that we knew we were going to the Middle East.
So you went up to Ilkley Moor?
Yes. And we were just training there a bit, you know. It wasn't as heavy as what it had been anywhere else. Just sort of on the move, waiting to go to join a ship, really.
Was this a big camp at Ilkley Moor?
I should think it'd be what? Company strength, I think, there, Harry.
Was it Durham Light Infantry?
Yes. It was all from Durham units, yes. There was 16th, 17th, and various odds and sods, I think, had been put in from various regions. I can't remember where. But I know that I went down with tonsillitis, and I knew nothing about it really, except they told me I'd been hallucinating through the night and hadn't been able to eat, get anything past me for about 3 or 4 days. And I didn't want to report sick because I didn't want to lose the draft. So I was in hospital in Beverley, near Hull. And when I reported back, I went into the tent and they were parading, morning parade, whatever it was. I didn't know at that particular time, having more or less just arrived and seen the MO. And he told me that I had to go into hospital again in a month's time to have my tonsils out. And I said, I didn't want to. I said, I'm fortunate to get back here and I'm on draft and I want to go overseas. And he looked at me. He said, well, in that case, there's nothing I can do about it if you're refusing treatment for it. So Corporal came into the tent. He says, what the MO give you, 10C? I said, no. He said, what was it? I said, medicine in duty. He says, come on outside with the rest of them. Next thing I knew, we're in potato fields picking potatoes. I was buggered.